ध्यायामोदबलावगुण्डनवतीं तेजोमयीं नैष्टिकीं स्निग्धाबाङ्गविलोकिनीं भगवतीं मन्दस्मितश्रीमुखीं वात्सल्यामृतवर्षिणीं सुमधुरं सङ्कीर्तनालापिनीं श्यामाङ्गीं मधुसिक्तसूक्तिं अमृतानन्दात्मिकामीश्वरी कटाक्षकिरणाच्छान्तः
कटाक्षकिरणाच्छान्तः
नमन्मोहाब्धये नमः
नमन्मोहाब्धये नमः
कटाक्षकिरणाच्छान्तः
कटाक्षकिरणाच्छान्तः
नमन्मोहाब्धये नमः
नमन्मोहाब्धये नमः
अनन्तानन्दकृष्णाय
अनन्तानन्दकृष्णाय
जगन्मङ्गलमूर्तये
जगन्मङ्गलमूर्तये
अनन्तानन्दकृष्णाय
अनन्तानन्दकृष्णाय
जगन्मङ्गलमूर्तये
जगन्मङ्गलमूर्तये
कटाक्षकिरणाच्छान्तः
कटाक्षकिरणाच्छान्तः
नमन्मोहाब्धये नमः
नमन्मोहाब्धये नमः
अनन्तानन्दकृष्णाय
अनन्तानन्दकृष्णाय
जगन्मङ्गलमूर्तये
जगन्मङ्गलमूर्तये
कटाक्षकिरणाच्छान्तः
कटाक्षकिरणाच्छान्तः
नमन्मोहाब्धये नमः
नमन्मोहाब्धये नमः
अनन्तानन्दकृष्णाय
अनन्तानन्दकृष्णाय
जगन्मङ्गलमूर्तये
जगन्मङ्गलमूर्तये
Yeah, this is the first shloka of Advaita Makaranda. So since we saw what is the purpose of this work, so first the author starts, any work starts with what is called as Mangalacharanam. So Mangalacharanam is also a way to explain or give Anubandha Chatushtayam in few places. So here Anubandha Chatushtayam can be found out from this shloka or the next shloka as well. But that is one way, like to give the subject matter, the first shloka, the starting shloka gives the subject matter generally of the entire work. And here the author speaks about like Anubandha Chatushtayam in various ways. I don't want to enter into all those Anubandha Chatushtayam. We can go through Tejomay Ananda's book to find out as to what are the Anubandha Chatushtayam. But in this shloka, the author praises Ishvara as well as praises his own Guru. Guru Ishvara Vandanam is what is initially done by all traditional authors or people, traditional Vedantins who write works, they praise their Acharya or their Guru as well as Ishvara. So as we saw, like the next shloka is kind of very important, which is the entire basis of the work. But in this shloka as well, the author tries to say as to what is needed in life, what do we really need in life, or seeking what do we learn Vedanta. So many people learn Vedanta for different purposes. So the same set of people, same group, same Vedantic class. So if you go and ask the entire, one entire batch of Chinmaya Mission as to why they are learning Vedanta, everyone will have a different kind of answer. Everyone will give their own interpretations or their own perspective of learning Vedanta. So, one reason to learn Vedanta is it can give moksha. And another reason to learn Vedanta is because, like, we are close with Chinmaya Mission, so Chinmaya Mission people believe in Vedanta, therefore I have want to learn. Another reason is I want to learn the Shastras. So there are people who learn the Shastras. Shastra Jnanam, I need knowledge of the scripture, therefore I am learning Vedanta. Not because I am expecting something out of learning of Vedanta. So there are people who would give that reason as well. And others would say, oh, this is a, since it is recession time, this is a good time to find a different place or different occupation or profession. Since there aren't many people who are learned in Vedanta, therefore if I learn Vedanta, I can use it as a profession. Of course, is Vedanta used as a profession? Definitely Vedanta. There are many universities where Vedanta is taught as part of the curriculum of Sanskrit. So there are many professors there, like Aparna's father's guru. It's a kind of a professor. So professors are there. So not today, but like some few years back as well, people thought that this is a good way to earn money. And there are yet others like who learn Vedanta in order to preach. So if you preach Vedanta, of course you get money for it. As long as Vedanta is not is not expressed as such, as long as Vedanta is expressed in such a way that it is pleasing to others, there will be people like who will offer money for it. Of course, there are people like who, there are sannyasis who have like or necessitate money to be sought for Vedanta, because Vedanta is not something that has to be given, that can be given free of cost. The best example is Swamini Vimalananda of Chinmaya Mission. Of course, she is a very, very great speaker. She is a very great speaker, and she believes that Vedanta should not be given free of cost, else people will not know its value. Therefore, her discourses are often priced. It's like the movie tickets, or like when we go to a drama, or when we like attend a Michael Jackson's, let's say, like he is giving a performance. So like that, 250, 500 and all are charged for Swamini's discourses. Of course, there are people to give as well, that's a different thing. So that all those are there. So there are many reasons why people learn Vedanta. So here the author like says, it's not about all these purposes. Even moksha, I want moksha itself is also not true, not a proper attitude or aspect from an aspirant. Because what is moksha? Moksha is a vague term. Moksha is interpreted in different ways. Like many people consider moksha as going to Vaikuntha. Many people consider moksha as staying with Amma. Oh, there is sa lokya mukti is there, going to the loka of one particular god, that is sa lokya mukti. There is also samipya mukti, being close with the person. So sa lokya, I want to be in the on earth where Amma is there. I want to be in India where Amma is there. That is sa lokya, the same loka. The second is samipyam. So I don't want the loka alone, like I want a little more. I want to be near Amma, so stand behind Amma, tour with Amma, or join the mission and stay with Amma. So that is Samipyam. And there is Sarupyam. So you have seen kids or people who dress like Amma. There are people who dress like Amma. That means they want to have the form of Amma. They want to have the form of Amma. Whatever Amma's form is doing, they want to do the same thing. So that is Sarupya Mukti. And the final is what is called as Sayujyam there. There is no difference at all, like a person merges onto Ishvara. So of all these muktis, different people say they want different muktis. So if we go and ask about what is moksha, many people will give different answers. Many people will say, like, I want to know the Atman. I want to realize who Amma is. I want to be able to sing bhajan with devotion. all those answers will be God-like if we ask the same question. Are those moksha? So moksha is a very vast term. And often we don't understand as to what is moksha. So moksha, the word moksha itself means liberation. So liberation means like there is no attainment of Atman. There is no union with Ishvara. Union with Ishvara is already there. So what does moksha do? Moksha is more, as Paramahata often says, moksha is often expressed in a negative way. Moksha is removal of whatever obstructs us from Sayujyam. Or experiencing bliss out of Sayujyam, that is moksha. So we think moksha is just attaining the Atman, realizing oneself. We are already realized, there is nothing else to realize. Then what is it? That removal of moham. So moha nivaranam can be called as moksha. Of course, Balakrishna Nair says moksha is anandam. But in many places he says moksha. What is moksha? Purna dukkha vimochanam. So that is why Paramahata says, often like Paramahata says in many places that in Vedanta there is nothing to attain, there is no knowledge to gain. It's only ajnanam to be removed. So that means it is removal, a process of cleansing that happens in Vedanta, not something that is attained. So what is moksha? Moksha is removal of whatever obstructs us from experiencing bliss, which is called Purna Dukkha Vimochanam. Or dukkha nivaranam, removal of dukkha, or escaping from dukkha. And what is caused by dukkha? Moham, delusion that I am the body, delusion that I am so and so, delusion that I am not the Atman. So for many people it's not, the delusion is not about I am the body, the delusion is that I am not the Atman. So that's so strong in their concept that they know that they are not the Atman. That's how they believe. So moham has to be removed. So delusion, dukkham, all those are to be removed. And like if dukkham is removed, what will remain behind is sukham. If moham is removed, what will remain behind is the Atman. Therefore moksha is often described as just anandam, ananda anubhavam. Technically, moksha, the best way to explain moksha is removal of dukkham and not experience of anandam, because anandam is already there. Remove dukkham, automatically anandam will be experienced. So it is a kind of a removal process. So moksha, some people say they want moksha from Vedanta, but what is moksha? They don't know what is moksha. So if you go to Amma and ask Amma, I want moksha, then Amma obviously knows that like you don't know what is moksha. So she'll say like she'll just like play around. If you don't know what is moksha, it's easy. Like you go to a store and then ask, I want this particular thing. And he will give you something. And they say this is what you wanted. That may not be what we wanted. But we don't know that what we want. Therefore, we can be tossed around. So here the author says, moha namat. So, achanta kataksha kirana achanta naman mohabdhaye namaha. Mohabdhaye achanta. So, mohabdhaye. So, moha abdi. The ocean of delusion. Achanta means it's like dried. Papandakararka. Paramparabhyam, tapatraya hindra kageshwarabhyam, jadhya visamshoshana bhadavabhyam. So jadhya abdi, ignorance, the ocean of ignorance is dried up by the fire of bhadavagni, which is jnanam, jnanagni. So here the author says that moha abdi, this ocean of delusion, achantam, it is wet. By what? Kadaksha kirana, by the kadaksha kiranam of Ishvara, or my guru, he is saying, kadaksham. So kadaksham is something, so kadaksham, kadaksha kiranam, or rays of kadaksham, or grace. as Amma says, like, grace is something which is really required. Ishvara anugraha deva pumsam advaita vasana. Advaita vasana is achieved only by Ishvara's grace. But Amma says, Ishvara's grace is already there, always there. Then what do we have to do, like, in order to apprehend Ishvara's grace? Ye yatha mam prapadhyanti tam tataiva bhajamyaham. Whatever a person seeks, he will get whatever he is seeking. Yatha ya matihi sa gatihi. Whatever is the mati, whatever is the buddhi, such will be the gati as well of a person. That will be what a person will be seeking. So here it means that kataksha kiranam means seeking removal of dukkham, seeking removal of moham. So, ananda anubhavam, many people experience anandam. So, if they go to Amma and say, Amma, I want anandam, then Amma will say, already, okay, sit with me. So, if you, as long as person is sitting with Amma, like, you'll feel anandam. And then when Amma goes back, anandam will again be, get reduced and it will grow. It will be like chandra, like the waxing and waning of the moon, like that is how it will be. So, that means that is not what is the purpose. So, that is temporary anandam. So, what do we really need? We need to get rid of dukkham. So, and as I said earlier, dukkha vimochanam and sukha prapti, both are almost the same. When dukkham vanishes, a person will feel a sense of satisfaction, a sense of completeness. But that sense of satisfaction, sense of completeness, happy state, that is not something which can be expressed in words. Therefore, it is a better perspective to say, or better way to say, that I should not be suffering, I should not have any sorrow. So, by whose grace? So, that means asking for getting rid of dukkham, getting rid of moham. So, it is moha abdi. Now, the author says that it is moha abdi. It is ocean of delusion. Ocean of delusion means one delusion can lead to another delusion, which can lead to another, as Nuchur says, kam dukam iva patati, falling from the top, from the 100th, like a ball falling from the 100th step, when it falls, it will gain more momentum, it will come down till the end, or it can be considered like a maze. You enter into it, it's just one entrance, that's it, like you just keep one or a couple of steps, and then you get completely lost out. Or it's like the web weaved by a spider. Once you get into it, then like it's kind of very tough, like each and other things. And the world is a place of interlinked people and things. So, the things that will start with one will lead to many things, and ultimately it will lead to a person's fall. Person will have to fall from, like, even seeking like the moksha of removal or complete removal, complete cessation of dukkha and experience of eternal bliss, a sense of satisfaction, a person will have to fall from that if one moham is developed. So one moham can lead to yet another one. And can, so taking a simple example, coffee. If a person is getting addicted to coffee, it's one small delusion. But what will it happen? So, the first it is just one coffee, and then one coffee will lead to like second coffee, and then like after a few days it will be comparison of coffee, then it will be like Dunkin' Donuts coffee, McD coffee, and then Starbucks, and if there is something else, then that also will start. So, that means one small indulging, like, or one small delusion, one entrance will lead to multiple things. And the web that is weaved is kind of huge, that once we enter into it, coming out is kind of very tough. So it is moha abdhi. So the ocean of delusion can be removed by the grace, or the rays of grace of Ishvara. And that Ishvara, namat, I prostrate onto Naman Mohabdaye Namaha. Sorry. Namaha. I prostrate to that Ishvara whose grace, whose rays of grace remove the ocean of delusion for people, namat, for people who prostrate onto them. So that means Here the author says it's not just asking Ishvara about moksha, but the author says, like asking, as we saw, asking moksha can be confusing. Like we will ask something else, we will not ask what we really want, we will be asking something else. Therefore the author says that it is namat, people who surrender onto such mahatmas. So people who go to such mahatmas, such jnanis, and say, "Oh Ishvara, you alone are there." So such people will be able to get rid of this ocean of delusion. So here we can also say that the author is indirectly telling namat means people who prostrate means, or people who surrender means, people who pervade their mind with the thought of Ishvara. So Ishvara Chinta or Ishvara Smarana has to be always there in the mind, and whatever is seen, whatever is heard should be understood as that Ishvara's grace, that Ishvara's blessing, that Ishvara's will. So whatever is seen around, whatever is experienced, all those have to be seen and experienced as Ishvara, in a way Ishvara creating whatever his predicament, or like whatever he has to do in the world, he is doing it. So everything is ordained by Ishvara, and if that has to be remembered, if that is remembered, then it is complete surrender. So there is surrender, and such people, for such people, this mohabdhi will vanish achantam. So this ocean of delusion will immediately vanish. Of course, moha vino kama krodho bijayate krodhat bhavati sammoha. So kama krodha moha. So kamam and krodham lead to moham. Kamam and krodham are caused by like dual vision, or not being able to link people. If not non-dual vision, at least trying to understand that there is something which binds everyone. Muktasu sutravat. Even as various beads are connected by the string, similarly everything, this entire world, all the objects and people of the world are connected by the string of Ishvara. If that is what has to be known. So at least if we cannot have non-dual vision, at least try to remember that everything is controlled by one Ishvara. Everything is in essence like standing for Ishvara, working for Ishvara. At least that will remove the dual notion. Though we may be experiencing duality, but still if we have this attitude, if we remember that everything is ordained or controlled by one Ishvara, then that means that we consider everything as collectively one Ishvara, standing for one Ishvara. So duality there merges into non-duality, and if it merges into non-duality, then there is no kamam or krodham. And even if there is kamam and krodham, it is towards Ishvara. And towards Ishvara, I mean, it all automatically means that this Ishvara is controlling the entire world. So there is no other kamam. So kamam and krodham often lead to problem. Only when there are multiple kamam, multiple krodham. So like if there are two objects, that is when problem starts. It's not just one object. Like of course if we see one object as different, like there will be another object as well. So we get, it's not one attachment that causes problem, that one attachment linked to attachment to our own body, attachment linked to other things, that conflicts. So in this case, one attachment of Ishvara is enough to get rid of dukkham. So that is fine. If that is that attitude is maintained, then there is no krodham, there is no moham, and therefore mohabdhi, this ocean of delusion will be dried up by Ishvara's grace. Ishvara's grace, which works as remembering that everything is one Ishvara. If we can't remember that everything is essentially just nama rupam, so which means essentially they are all Ishvara, everything is Ishvara, there's nothing different here, it's only Ishvara who is present in everything or as everything. If we can't at least remember that, at least everything is controlled, like everything is like a, it is like a puppet show where the puppeteer is a real person and he is holding the strings to various puppets. Similarly, Ishvara controls everything here. So, like, if one puppet kills another puppet, like, we will not shout. We will not, like, call 911 and say, oh, this puppet is, like, can you please help it? We will not say, because it's all the puppeteer. We know that everything is controlled by the puppeteer. So, if this entire world is controlled by one Ishvara, then duality immediately vanishes, which means Mohabdi will vanish. So, either if we can remember that everything is one Ishvara, everything is just Namarupam, which is not real, everything is only Ishvara, well and good. If we cannot, then at least we should try to remember that everything is ordained or controlled by one Ishvara. And who is this Ishvara? So the author will come to echo, is this some Ishvara somewhere in Vaikuntha or Kailasam? So the next shloka the author will say that Ishvara is my own very nature. So that is why there is moksha is not attaining anything, moksha is just removing the ignorance veil, removing this delusion that I am something else, that I am the body, I am the mind, I am so and so. In fact, or in reality, I am one with Ishvara. But here the author says, Anantananda Krishnaya. This Ishvara is Anantananda Krishna. So, Anantananda Krishna. So, Krishna here means like his Ishta Devata is Krishna. Anantananda Krishna. That Krishna who is Anantam, infinite and Anandam. So, one who is blissful in nature. So, Krishna, if we consider Krishna as the avatara, Krishna avatara, we will know that he was Ananta. In each and every part of Mahabharata, he was there. And he is also Ananda. Wherever he was there, he was able to give bliss because he didn't have this Moha Abdi. Moha Abdi was not there. Therefore, Ananta Ananda Krishnaya. And Jagan Mangala Murtaye is the Mangala Murti for the entire world. So, Mangala Murti. Mangala Murti means not just mere auspiciousness. So here auspiciousness means he gives Mangalam, he gives Anandam to whoever worship him, whoever surrender onto him, whoever remember him. So any person who remembers this Ishvara, he will be able to get rid of Mohabdi at least to an extent and thereby get the grace of that Ishvara or the rays of grace of that Ishvara. And thereby, like, he'll be able to experience that Anandam. So, on to such an Ishvara, I offer my prostrations. Of course, the author will say that as to what is the, what is that Ishvara, like, what do I have to do with that Ishvara, and the subject matter, which we'll see in the next day. Om Namah Shivaya.